Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code BROS. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that you can only get high on. We're done with that, all right? Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for, whether that's the Mind Magic gummies for deep work and creativity, or the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, but Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to that perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use the promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Stop shuffling through life like a zombie. You're bumming everybody out. Grab a CardoMax Energy Intensifier and wake up. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Matson, CardoMax's Energy Intensifier will help you power through your workouts and dead afternoons with vitamins B3, B6, B12, caffeine, and BCAAs. Use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders at CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. We have one of the most requested guests in show history on today, Mr. Ben Shapiro. I say that a lot, but I mean it. I mean it. This, number two behind Rogan. Everybody's like, hey, can you get Rogan and Ben Shapiro? After 1,045 episodes, get off my back. Get off my back. We got Ben Shapiro on the show today, D'Anthony. He's got a new book out, The Authoritarian Moment, How the Left Weaponized America's Institutions Against Dissent. It is currently number one. It's the number one bestseller in the world. I hesitate to say New York Times bestseller list because we know how that operates. Did they give it to you?
No, they didn't. And honestly, I didn't deserve it this time. Mark Levin's book is outselling mine. I'm just going to give props to Levin, who's just selling like hotcakes. I've never seen anything like it. But the book has sold really well. So I appreciate that.
He's his last one, too, was the only conservative book on the top 15 of the New York Times bestseller list all through 2019 when Matt Best's book came out.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
It's crazy.
I mean, come on.
Well, it's a curated list.
You look at the people who read books and audiobooks and particularly watch podcasts and talk radio. It is like 65% conservative. So how are they not buying books? I mean, come on, man. Is this not... Whatever.
It's a curated list. I will say this, Ben. Check the numbers on Friday in Publishers Weekly. That'll tell you what you really sold versus everybody else, and it's not even close.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is certainly true. I mean, we had a situation over at Daily Wire where my nemesis, Michael Knowles, who I pay, he actually sold in his first week the most of any nonfiction bestseller, and he didn't even make the list, like completely off the Times list. So the Times list is full of it, but, you know, so be it. It's all right. You know, we still get paid the same. It's all right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The money's still green and rolls into your accounts. A lot going on in the world today, Ben. We'll start with this morning's news about Afghanistan. Dan, I heard there was a drone strike, but didn't hit the intentional target today.
Well, no, I mean, that's pretty common. I think there was one report that U.S. drone strikes during the Obama administration were severely inaccurate. I don't have the numbers, so I'm going to say it out loud, but it was quite a bit. And there's no surprise here. I mean, how the fuck do you expect for a drone strike to be accurate when you don't have eyeballs on a target? That's how this whole thing works, right? That's why the U.S. military is so dominant, is because of the combination of our special operators and ISR and drones, right? That's mm-hmm. what makes us so dominant, is the tech plus the people. Take either one of those parts out, and it levels the playing field immediately, right? And if you think you're going to launch precision airstrikes blind, that's fucking stupid. That's like throwing darts with your eyes closed.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And Ben, Biden has not handled this well. He appears to be stuck at this point. What do you think his next move is regarding Afghanistan?
I mean, I think that he's basically just hoping it all goes away. Because for him, throughout his career, that's been true, right? I mean, if you just wait for the news cycle to move past something, then his hope is that the news cycle moves past it. You know, when it comes to this particular drone strike, I always want to wait a couple of days to hear what actually happened, because very often you hear conflicting claims. This happens a lot. Mm-hmm. United States in Afghanistan, U.S. in Iraq, Israel in the Gaza Strip. You'll hear sort of claims come out that civilians were hurt, and then it takes a little while to actually suss out what happened. But assuming that what did in fact happen was that we hit a bunch of civilians as opposed to, say, an ISIS suicide bomber, it would speak to exactly what you guys are talking about. I mean, we removed all resources from the country. There was a story today in The Washington Post that as the country collapsed, as the government collapsed, the Taliban were so taken aback by the collapse of the government that they actually offered the United States to maintain its security grip on Kabul long enough to actually evacuate all of its people. And Biden was like, no, I want to evacuate faster than that. We'll just take the airport. You guys take Kabul, which is insane. I mean, it's completely wild. I've never seen anything remotely like this botchery. And I don't think anybody has, because it really is a combination of the fall of Saigon, the 1979 hostage crisis. Instead of 52 Americans being held hostage by the Iranian mullahs, now you have presumably hundreds or thousands of Americans and American green card holders and Afghans who worked with us who are stuck behind enemy lines right now. After that bombing last week, it looks like the 1982 Hezbollah bombing of the Marine barracks in Lebanon. And I think you're going to have to add in the element of Iran-Contra here, where I think that there's a very, very solid shot the United States is going to be sending money directly to the Taliban in order to facilitate them sending whoever we want out.
Right.
So it's a complete disaster area. It's a mess. And there's sort of a couple of aspects of it that are worthy of discussion. One is the actual tactical mess that was made here, namely withdrawing all close air support, withdrawing all military contractors from the Afghan military, so completely collapsing them from within, and then saying, you know what, we don't even need Bagram Air Base. We'll hang out here at the embassy and here at HKIA at Hamid Karzai International Airport, and you guys take the rest and we'll rely on you for security. I mean, tactically, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But then there's the actual strategic thinking, which is, was it really necessary for us to pull out this way, like at all? We had 2,500 troops on the ground in Afghanistan. We had not had a combat casualty in Afghanistan since February of 2020. And so for all the talk about this is America's longest war, it's an endless war, it was more dangerous to be a cop in Chicago over the course of the last 18 months than it was to be an American soldier in Afghanistan, statistically speaking. And so the notion that like this, we were on the verge of a blow up, that we were going to have to insert tens of thousands of troops, I've seen no evidence provided for that contention whatsoever. Biden just wanted to pull out and he didn't care what happened.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the idea that we're going to start funding look, not that we haven't been funded the Taliban already, but what we did was we gave them an army and all the weapons they would ever need to conduct warfare. I mean, this is the same shit we've done in Pakistan over the last, 60 years or so, something like that. We've funded the ISI, which if you ask anybody in the special operations community or the intelligence community, they know that about 60% of the ISI are fucking terrorists, right? Like, they are the worst human beings on earth. And they are solely responsible for the Mumbai terror attacks. We have direct evidence that it was being controlled from Pakistan, right? And we're going to do it again now. Like, it's just a matter of time. Right now, we've started the clock, right? The stopwatch has begun on when the next terror attack is going to happen. And it may not be here in the United States. Maybe it's somewhere else. But either way, it falls on us.
Right.
I mean, have you ever heard of anything in the history of America, even when we've had some leaders or whatever that are disliked on the international community, I've never heard the English Parliament go into session and say, we're not going to work with the Americans again until this motherfucker's gone. Like, I've never even heard of anything like that before. Because you don't say shit like that.
It's crazy. I mean, the international community's reaction to Biden, and it really does give the lie to the whole, you know, Trump was so bad and Biden's going to restore America on the world stage. And now most of the world is looking at Biden and you're either an American enemy, in which case you're licking your chops, or you're an American ally, in which case you're saying, I need to triangulate and triangulate fast, because these people cannot be trusted to keep any of their commitments whatsoever. If you're Taiwan at this point, why would you look to the United States for any solid level of support? If you're Saudi Arabia and the Biden regime, well, Biden administration is now negotiating with the Iranian regime, and you're the Saudis, you're like, I better triangulate fast and start making some connections with Russia, with China, try and solidify those connections with Israel and Egypt, because I can't rely on the Americans. I saw a story last week about how Israel had not been sharing intelligence with the Biden administration. All I could think is, why in the world would they? Like, what would prompt them to do so? Given the
you don't want to give Biden information and have him put it on a list and hand it over to the fucking Taliban, right? That's probably not a good idea. Jesus Christ, man, these people are fighting for their lives. All that look, that situation with Israel and Palestine is very complex. It's a very nuanced situation, but the idea that they're under constant attack is not. That we didn't just make that shit up.
Right.
That shit is real. It's been going on for a long time. Saudi Arabia, frankly, they can go fuck themselves. You know what I mean? I mean, 83% of the primary schools there are your madrasas, which teach death to America. So I don't give a fuck about those people. I mean, honestly, clean up your own shit. But it is, you're absolutely right. Why would anybody partner with us at this point? You know what I mean?
And, you know, look, the United States routinely partners with people who we find pretty egregious. The question is a balance of power interest. And when it comes to the Saudis versus the Iranians, I mean, there's not really a good pick there, right? The Saudis are a disaster area, have been a disaster area for a long time. But the Iranians are the chief sponsors of global terrorism and regional terrorism. And so the conflict in the Middle East, you know, to get out of Afghanistan is really a serious concern for the United States, insofar as Iran has killed American troops in Iraq. Has created the instability in Syria, has created instability in Lebanon, is creating instability in Yemen, is supporting global terrorism all over the place. And now they're on the verge of gaining nuclear weapons, and Biden is negotiating with them. Meanwhile, they're launching drone attacks on Saudi oil sites. So, I mean, all of this stuff does have ramifications for sort of the United States' place in the world. But, you know, the bottom line here is that if you really are worried about sort of sort of America's geostrategic interests, put aside the Middle East for a second and look at China. Right, China is immediately signifying that they're going to recognize the Taliban. They're going to get access to all of their rare earths minerals. They're not only that, we handed the Taliban like $85 billion of American sophisticated military equipment, ranging from night vision goggles, which completely changes the war on the ground and the conditions on the ground there, because that was our superpowers. We could see at night and they couldn't, to like fixed wing aircraft. We handed them drones. We handed them 100 helicopters. We handed them something like 360,000 AKs, so-called assault rifles.
Yeah.
You know, this is an enormous amount of weaponry. And the more sophisticated stuff ain't going to be flown by the 8th century goat herders who are constituting the Taliban. That stuff's just going to get sold right over to the Chinese, who are immediately going to reverse engineer all of our military tech.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, we could spend all day talking about these military situations and our geopolitical stances and stuff like that. This all reminds me, I mean, just the culmination of all of this stuff, the lies from the government, the ridiculous way that they've prosecuted this situation, but pretty much everything since they've taken over. And this isn't new, right? I mean, we've been facing this stuff for some time now. It's just continuously going downhill. America is kind of rotting from the inside. And I wonder, it reminds me of that Phil Jackson quote from his book, "You're only successful at the moment you perform a successful act," right? We think, well, this is America. It's the best country in the world. Well, you better goddamn be ready to stand up and make that the case every single day, or shut the fuck up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to hear that shit anymore until somebody's willing to do something about it. Now we have men willing to do something. Our government is inept. So certain people went overseas and handled that business themselves. There's about 10 to 15,000 people alive today that wouldn't have been alive, right? Mm-hmm. If not for these men and these backdoor channels that we've been using. And that is fucking pathetic. Honestly, it is pathetic that we've left our people there. Like one of my buddies just got out this morning. He's in Qatar today, right? But he was a U.S. interpreter that actually lives here in Austin.
Ah, right? You don't say.
He's lived here for a while. He went back. So the U.S. government says, hey, we're going to pull everybody out by X date. So all these Afghan people who are now American citizens are like, all right, I'm going to go back and visit my family probably for the last time. because the Taliban's going to murder fucking everybody
yep.
as soon as they get a chance to. So I'm going to go back, visit my family, get out before this shit goes down. And then Biden pulls the fucking bathtub drain for no reason.
No reason. And Ben, my biggest question to you is, why give the world a date? I don't understand that. It's like driving with your wife to a surprise party and being like, guess where we're going? Surprise party. I don't understand that whatsoever. And to me, like, that was the biggest failure of all of this. What was the reasoning, do you think, on his side? Because I have not found a good answer for this so far.
Originally, you remember, the claim was that this was because the Trump administration had given a date of May 1st for us to get out. But that deal was totally conditional. Right? If you actually look at the deal that was put on paper by Pompeo and the Trump administration, it said if the Taliban do X, Y, and Z, then we'll start to pull out and complete it by X date. The Taliban didn't do any of X, Y, or Z. So it was really unrealistic that we were ever going to pull out by May if, for example, Trump had been reelected. Mm. So then Biden said, I want out by September 11th, because for some odd reason, he thought the symbolic date of pulling out by September 11th would be sort of a bookend. And he's going to get the bookend, right? He's going to get American bodies falling from towers on September 11, 2001, and Afghan bodies falling from C-17s, you know, circa the end of August 2021. So he's getting the bookend, but that's what it started off as. And then he accelerated the date to August 31st because he was told by his military people, we're not even sure we can hold this thing until September 11th, given the constraints that you've now put on us. And so it got accelerated to August 31st. He announced the August 31st date. The Taliban seized on that. And they said, okay, well, if that's your date, that's now our red line. You guys have to be out by August 31st, or we're going to start basically just getting out of the way and letting ISIS do whatever the hell it wants, letting Al-Qaeda do whatever the hell it wants. And hey, we might turn our guns on you. You never know. And so Biden had to accelerate that timeline. There are a bunch of massive and obvious strategic blunders here, ranging from, again, the withdrawal of all close air support and military contractors. So we grounded their entire air force and destroyed their capacity to make war. The Afghan military took 50,000 dead since 2015. And Joe Biden's out there being like, yeah, these guys are all cowards. They just melted out. And it's like the United States between 2015 and now took a little bit under 100 American dead, which is, you know, every one of those is horrifying and tragic. But the Afghan military took 50,000 dead between 2015 and now. And Joe Biden's like, yeah, they're all cowards. It wasn't him removing all close air support, which is exactly how their entire military was built. It was just, you know, they were cowards and they just went away. That was part of the problem. He also decided to set the date because he wanted the symbolism. He set the date in the middle of the summer fighting season, which is like the most obvious thing. Right? Everybody was advising him, dude, like wait a couple of months and now it's winter in Afghanistan and the fighting season is over and the Taliban, you know, run back up into their caves and they stay there for a few months. And that at least gives the Afghan army some time to adjust before the Taliban come rushing down from the hills again. And instead, Biden's like, nope, we're going to do this in the middle of the summer in the heat of the fighting season. And we are going to basically just hand the country over to them. It's like the utter incompetence of it is amazing. And then he blames his own military for it, right? Then he blames, everybody gets the blame, right? It's Trump's fault. It's the Afghan military's fault. And it's his military leadership's fault. He went out there last week in his pathetic ass covering PR move. And he says, you know, we had universality among my military commanders as to the mission and to the method of accomplishing them. That's not even true. I mean, everybody was telling him. Austin was telling him. Milley was telling him. For as much as I don't like those guys, they were telling him February, March, you got to leave a skeleton crew there. And if you want to pull out, this is not the way you pull out. And he was like, nope, we're getting out. Milley said openly the reason that they got rid of Bagram Air Base is because Biden had told them he wanted 600 to 700 troops on the ground. They could not hold both Bagram and the embassy with 600 to 700 troops. So Milley said, okay, we'll defend the embassy, but we can't defend Bagram. And then we'll use Kabul International Airport. And that is not because Milley didn't want to hold Bagram. It's because Biden told him, I'm giving you basically this number of troops. Now pick. I mean, that's not the military's fault. And it's fault of the guys on the ground.
It's not the military's fault. It's certainly Austin and Milley's fault. If it doesn't matter what level the leader is at, if they come and tell you something that you know is going to get somebody killed, you say no and you say it loud and you say it in public. These guys are cowards. And we've known that. We'll get into Milley and his critical race bullshit here in a few. But these dudes are just total pieces of shit. When you have Lloyd Austin talking about how COVID is a bigger threat to the United States military than anything else, when about 10x amount of people have killed themselves and died of COVID, right, in the military over the last year, these people deserve none of our trust. And what bothers me even more is how many people from the left are coming out in support of Biden. This hashtag, I stand with Biden on Twitter. Are you fucking kidding me? The only reason, Biden the other day, or yesterday actually, receiving some troops, our dead Marines at Dover, has his eyes closed. Maybe he fell asleep again. I don't know. We hear him snoring audibly during a fucking political meeting with a foreign leader. He looks down and checks his watch. Are you fucking kidding me? The only reason Democratic politicians can get away with disrespecting members of the armed forces is because their base doesn't give a fuck. That's the only way you can get away with that, right?
And also because the media will cover for them, right? Can you imagine? You remember when Trump went overseas and it was to mark some you know military date having to do with World War One? He went to a World War One cemetery, and there was this big story in the Atlantic about how he had disrespected the troops and he had said something bad in the car about the troops, and it was unsourced and all that. And it was a national news story because it was the middle of the campaign. Joe Biden is obviously and clearly looking at his watch, waiting for dead bodies of American servicemen to come home. And they're only dead because his policies in Afghanistan were garbage. And what is it? Is Matlock on? Like, what's so urgent that you got to check your watch? Like, it's pretty obvious that had that been Trump, there's no question the world explodes with he's so cruel. How dare he look at his watch and all the rest?
So I've got a theory on this, and it's not really a theory so much. It's just a question. I was in the 82nd Airborne. This is what we do. We seize airfields and then either us or Ranger battalions push out into an area about, 1 to 3 miles out to set up a perimeter. And then ISR comes overhead and special operators conduct missions, recon, whatever it happens to be, snatch and grab, whatever it is, right? We've done this. We did it in Panama. Millie was there. He was there in fucking Panama when we did this, right? So this, how did it go from the level of planning to execution and nobody said no? I mean, I guess one guy said no, the colonel in the Marine Corps that got booted. By the way, we've got a job for you, sir. If you're out there watching this right now, Black Rifle's got a job for you as soon as you're out of the military. Fuck these people. But how did it go from there all the way to there? I cannot believe that anybody could be that incompetent. I certainly do not believe that that amount of people could be incompetent. There's something more sinister going on here, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a distraction or if they're just so craven that they wanted to get the fuck out of there as soon as possible. I don't know what it is, but it's more than this. It's certainly not incompetence. It's more than incompetence.
Well, I think Biden put down the mandate, and then his people rushed to fulfill the mandate. And that's what's so incredible. Remember, Trump kept getting hit over and over while he was president with, look at all these crazy ideas. Look at what he's saying. And there were many times where members of his own military brass would tell him that he was wrong, and then he would accept that. And he'd be like, okay, you remember this happened with Mattis in Syria, right? Where Trump said, I want to pull everybody out of Syria. And Mattis said, you really can't do that. And he's like, okay. But Biden, nobody said no to the guy. He was just like, I'm setting a certain number of troops. I'm setting a certain date. And you guys just have to deal with it. And so you've got the Secretary of State out there playing overt PR agent for the Taliban. Right? You had the Pentagon. You had John Kirby out there saying, yeah, we've got the Taliban out there. And you had McKenzie doing the same thing from CENTCOM. We got the Taliban out there and we're relying on them to do security. And yeah, they're not super competent, but, they're doing their best. And then Kirby is asked directly, and so is McKenzie. So do you know that the Taliban didn't just let the ISIS bomber in? Like, no, we have no idea. Okay. The only way that happens is that, as always, when you get to the top of a hierarchical organization, in order to get to the top of a hierarchy, very often you just have to kiss ass and not make political waves. And people who reach, I mean, you know this better than I do, I'm sure. Like when you talk to guys who are boots on the ground, the military leadership to a lot of these guys is like, these are just politicians. In the same way that to American civilians, the president is a politician who just fibs and lies to make his way to the top. I think there are a lot of people who are in the armed services who look at the top of the brass and they say, well, a lot of those guys did the same thing to get there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, I was talking to one of my buddies who is a special forces operator the other day. And what he had told me was the reason that nobody in the brass, general officers, are willing to say no to these State Department officials, to DOD officials, to the president, whomever, is because they're careerists and they don't want to do anything that's going to scuff them up.
Yep.
Like these pieces of shit in Congress and the Senate who have made themselves rich, right? Off of manipulating and controlling other people. I mean, I can't think of anything more fucked up than that, by the way. But these people who have done this stuff, to get promoted as a general officer, you have to have votes from the Armed Services Committee, right? Mm-hmm. You can't go against these people or your career is over.
Right.
So if they say, we want people out, then you have to decide between ending your career or doing the right thing. And you see what most of these people are doing. I've seen one guy stand
about
up and
the money.
Say something.
It's about the money and the career. That's all they care about.
Yeah, that's all it is. By the way, this is an interesting little tidbit. I don't know if you check Gallup's presidential approval polls, but they stopped recording data after August 17th.
Did they really?
There's no new data on here.
That's a huge shock. That's a huge shock. How do you think this all ends up?
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. All of it. But is it surprising? I'm not surprised by any of it. Every single day I wake up, I'm unsurprised by what I read. Mm. How does this all end up for 2022, Ben? Because right now, you have the ultimate. Like, you can't use the insurrection bullshit anymore. You have the ultimate card for the Republicans to say, hey, guys, look who's in office. Look what has happened. And they can use that one photo of a woman handing her baby over the top of the fence to the U.S. soldier and say, we should have had the other guy with the mean tweets in there.
Yep. I mean, I think that 2022 is going to be super ugly for the Democrats. I thought it was going to be bad for them before. I think it's going to be egregiously bad for them now. I thought before that there was probably a 60-40 shot Republicans take back the House, and I thought it was maybe 50-50 Republicans take the Senate. I think it's now about 65-35 Republicans take both.
This is 2010 again, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Biden is collapsing in all these swing states. If you look at his numbers in New Hampshire, he's at like 40% in New Hampshire. He's at like 40% in Florida. He's way down in a lot of the swing states. He has reverse coattails at this point. Democrats are running away from him, and that's a real problem for him. You're going to start to see some Democratic retirements in swing districts. You start to see some good candidates on the Republican side, at least popular candidates in places like Nevada, right, which has not been historically Republican recently. Adam Laxalt running over there. He's probably going to win that Senate seat. You've got Sununu, who's probably going to end up running in New Hampshire. He's probably going to win that seat. The question mark's going to be like Ohio, maybe Wisconsin. But it's shaping up to be a very good year for Republicans who will, you know, presumably then blow it because that's what they do. But you know, the real problem for the Democrats is that on a presidential level, when you look forward to 2024, they have real problems, right? They like Joe Biden is not sentient. He is not with us. Yeah, I've been calling him President Houseplant for a while because he's just barely alive and there to hide the water stain. Now, Kamala Harris in waiting is like a nightmare scenario for the Democrats. She's the most unpopular politician in America, and she's not even held power yet. Wait until she holds power to see how unpopular she will become with that. First of all, if you could pick one person to play poker with, it's definitely Kamala Harris, right? I mean, like her, you ask her a tough question and she has the greatest tell in human history. She starts giggling like the Joker. Yeah, it's insane. So yeah, she's awful. So the Democrats basically have to wheel out Biden like Weekend at Bernie's or El Cid, right? They're going to strap him to the top of a horse and try to run him, because if they don't, they get Kamala in the wings. And this is why they're training all their fire at like Ron DeSantis in Florida, right? They're trying to early take out any of the possible Republican candidates. I don't think that it's going to work pretty well. I think the economy is probably going to stagnate starting in the last couple of years of his administration. Like, it's going really strong now, but inflation is out of control.
Yeah, inflation's high.
And
I heard Cuomo was pretty popular last summer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they can bring him back in a comeback tour.
Well, he won an Emmy, Ben. You know, they took it back.
Yeah, he had to give it back. When he had backed the Emmy, by the way, I thought to myself, man, if Hollywood is going to start forcing people who sexually assault and harass women to give back their Emmys, it's going to be a busy season in Hollywood, I think.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of Emmys to melt.
Would the Emmys exist?
No, but it's you're absolutely right about the political side of this. But what I think will probably happen is that some. Maybe long-term Democrat or maybe somebody that's relatively new on the scene has to come out and start talking shit about Biden, right? I mean, that's what you see. That's what you saw in the midterms with Trump. A lot of these Republicans like Kenzinger and all these people started flipping sides or whatever the fuck to try to like position yourself against an administration. Like that ship is sinking, right?
Sure.
The question is going to be which side it comes from. So now he's getting it from all sides, right? The squad always hated him because he's not sufficiently socialist and he's not sufficiently woke. And then you have like the Seth Moultons of the world, right, from Massachusetts, who are being overtly critical of him on a lot of the military matters. You know, if the moderates abandon him, he's completely toast, because there is only constituency. And he's been playing this game where he governs very much like Bernie Sanders, but he talks a lot more like Seth Moulton, for example. But now I think that a lot of that support's starting to fall away. So I think that he's got a real problem. And the bigger problem for him is that he thinks August 31st, that tomorrow is the end of this, right? That we hit tomorrow, the troops pull out, people forget about this, we all move our focus to Louisiana or whatever is the crisis of the day. And he's forgetting we're leaving hundreds of American citizens behind. All it takes is one tape of an American citizen being beheaded by ISIS. And all of a sudden, this is back on the front pages and everybody cares about it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm wondering who it's going to be from the Democratic side, because usually you kind of have a crystal ball and say, all right, there's this one great candidate there's a lot of hope for. I don't see it on the Democrats. No. On the Republicans, I see DeSantis, like you say, potentially Nikki Haley. I know she's dumped a bunch of money into Iowa.
Maybe both, right? I mean, that's a pretty strong ticket. And look, the Democrats are bad at doing a lot of stuff, like attacking people. They're not really good at it. It's like a kid on the playground that's trying to swear, but they don't really swear at home. So right. They don't, it doesn't, it's all out of context.
That's me. Stuff. I mean, but yeah,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I've heard you say fuck, Ben. I don't want to out you here, but I've heard you say,
that's true. Off the air, I curse like a sailor. That's true.
You do. It's, I respect your constraint. I was on Tucker Friday night and I was like, man, I'm going to say fuck. I know.
the whole audience was waiting too, by
our
the way.
Audience was like betting on whether or not I would say fuck on live TV. But
the fine is too heavy for the FCC.
Yeah, it is. What are the, we see these populist movements from people like the Squad, people like Trump, and even I guess Bernie Sanders is probably a larger version of the Squad. What are the chances that moderates at large or people who consider themselves moderates? And when I say moderates, what I really mean are entrenched bureaucrats in Washington, right?
Right.
What are the chances they abandon the fringes of the, both of their parties and make something more like a Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan situation? Do you think there's any shot at that?
So I think the only shot of anybody getting elected from either side at this point is going to be somebody who is combative. I think that the time for we're all coming together is now over. Joe Biden tried it, and then he proceeded to govern like a crazy person. So right. He came into office, and the promise was he was going to be a dead person who did moderate policy, and only one of those things ended up being true. So he so that's a serious problem. For I think the future, like Democrats are not going to nominate anybody from here on in who isn't very combative. And Republicans, the same thing. Like what Republicans learned from Trump is that it's not bad to be combative, which frankly is not a bad thing. Right. I think a lot of Republicans looked at Romney and they said that guy was not combative enough. He was way too civil and he never should have been that civil with people who were saying that he was strapping dogs to the top of his car and he was going to enslave black people again and all this. So that's what, by the way, that is DeSantis's popularity. Right. DeSantis is a very good governor of my new home state of Florida. But yeah. DeSantis is he also really knows how to deal with the press, and he doesn't take he doesn't take shit from people. So
But I don't think he really does anything crazy, though. I mean,
no, like he doesn't. He doesn't.
Trump was good at press and bad at press. He said stupid shit, but he didn't ever like this whole stuff with Biden walking off the stage in the middle of questioning. Trump would have stayed there all day and called. He would have called everybody assholes. He didn't care.
Yeah.
And McConaughey, when I think it was on Rogan, he talked about being a radical centrist. I don't think you have to be partisan to be combative. You can call bullshit where there's bullshit, right?
Yep.
So where's that person in politics? Where's that person that's like, no, you're wrong and you're wrong. Here's the right answer. And if somebody attacks them for it, it's like Charles Barkley, like, fuck you guys.
Yeah, will we ever get that?
DeSantis is the best thing that I've seen like that on the right side of the aisle. Mm. Like he actually has a lot of Democrats who support him in Florida. Mm. You know, for all the attempts to take him down. I mean, they've been trying to take him down for a while over here.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. No, I think that he's I think he's going to win his gubernatorial race in a walk.
Yeah.
I think he should. I mean, because all the vaccinated in Florida are vaccinated and all the unvaccinated don't want to be bothered. And so we're pretty much done. Right. So all the attempts to take down DeSantis, I think, have been a complete failure. And he is combative, but he's been able to work across the aisle with some of the Democrats in the state to the point where when he was getting some of those attacks, even some Democrats on the local level were like, that stuff isn't true. So I think he's really good. I think that I haven't seen much on the left side of the aisle by way of people who are sort of moderate. I've seen it at the local level, actually. Like I know a few Democrats who are mayors of towns in like Jersey or people who are moderate Democrats from Wisconsin. But the problem is that the media infrastructure is not set up for them to do that. And so that's a real problem for the Democrats right now. Like the media, the media are so rabid. It's so funny. They're always talking about how the right wing is rabid. And it's true. There's some people on the right wing. You know, there's some of us on the conservative side of the aisle who are like, take down everybody, burn it all down kind of types. But not the whole right. And on the left, the case in point that I'll use is this, on my show, which is very large, I'll say, like, go listen to a bunch of left-wing shows, listen to my show, decide who you like. Right? I do that all the time. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. There is nobody on the left who will ever do the same about my show, right? It'll just never happen. And so that incentive structure just doesn't exist for a Democrat to cross the aisle and actually be the person who has the conversation. I mean, there have been people who have gotten serious blowback simply for appearing on my show, for example, whereas no Republican has ever gotten serious blowback for appearing on a Democratic show unless they get skunked or something.
Ben, you've got one of the biggest podcasts in the world. You know we got some sponsors. I think we even share some of the same sponsors that put this show on the air. First and foremost is GhostBed.com/drinking bros. 40% off Labor Day sale. Bundle packages are here, kids. All you have to do is give Humpty a chance. And now you're going to do this dance. Get an adjustable base, a mattress, pillows, sheets, a topper, any combination of products on the site with the adjustable base. You get 40% off. Or you can do the stock standard 30% off anything in the entire store with the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. I'd highly recommend that adjustable base, by the way. Once you get used to it, you can't go back. It's got a remote control, and it is amazing. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today, where, as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there if you have decent credits. And all the deals that I just mentioned can be coupled with that, and you can walk away with like a $35 to $38 mattress set a month. It's amazing, dude. It's almost like stealing. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today and get on dem deals. Next up, we got CardoMax.com. Like I said at the top of the show, you're going to use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders. I don't even know if they count. Try to get more than four. Who knows? You might be able to. We put a lot of terrible stuff in our bodies here at Drinking Bros. But chances are, if you're a listener of this show, you're a pretty consistent poison regimen as well. For most of you guys, that's fine. We don't judge. You got to balance that out. Life is about balance. That's why we love CardoMax. When we need a clean, healthy pick-me-up, CardoMax Energy Intensifier uses the least amount of ingredients as possible. There's absolutely no junk in there to give you the energy you need to optimize your workouts, whatever else you're doing. You need a boost at work, dealing with the kids, some ungodly hour of the morning, or if you're just driving the long haul, whatever. CardoMax will keep you going. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL and fellow drinking bro, Sean Mattson, CardoMax Energy Intensifier comes in an easy-to-mix liquid packet in two great flavors, blue raspberry and pink lemonade. It tastes great, the ingredients are healthy, and it's made by a veteran. Support veterans. Support drinking bros. He's a drinking bro, for Christ's sakes. Sean Mattson. CardoMax is offering drinking bros an exclusive offer, 30% off your next four orders. Just go to CardoMax.com. Use the promo code DB. That is CardoMax, CardoMax.com. Use the promo code DB, and you will get 30% off your next four orders. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. And if you're achieving your max, you might as well achieve it with DraftKings. NFL is back, baby! DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner with the NFL, is giving you all new players a can't-miss offer for week one. Bet just $1, just one, on any NFL game during the first week of the season and receive $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. Take advantage of this limited time offer now. You heard that right. DraftKings is giving you all new players, any new player to the DraftKings app, $200 in free bets instantly when you place a bet of $1 or more on any week one game. Any week one game. That's it. It's coming up. 10 days away from it. Bucks, Cowboys. Bucks are going to destroy the Cowboys. I'm all in on that. Head to DraftKings Sportsbook app now to check out all the great promotions and daily odds boosts. Plus, you can make every game a big game with the same game parlays. Love those. You know daddy loves the parlays. Download the DraftKings Sports app now. Use the promo code BROS, that is B-R-O-S, BROS, to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any week one game. It's promo code BROS to get your free $200 in free bets instantly for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. You must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Last but not least, we've got GetRoman.com/drinkingbros. Come on, kids. You know what this is. Now that the world's opening back up, so many new thrills are on the horizon. And whether you've been in a relationship for years or just getting started, maybe you're even excited to get back out there and meet new people. When the moment comes, you want to be ready. Roman ready. Go to GetRoman.com/drinkingbros now to talk to a U.S. licensed healthcare professional. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for erectile dysfunction, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Roman ready equals confidence. the confidence that you know you can rise to the occasion in the moments. We're looking at the Summer of Love 2021 version, and Roman wants to make sure that you participate in your way, whether that's to be as a single person or a couple who would still rather stay with each other. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatable plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you for free. 2 days. It's very convenient, discreet. The packaging is nice. There's just a little blue package that just says Roman on it. Little tiny blue package. That's all it says, Roman. Nobody knows what that is. Your wife, mistress, nobody. Just go to GetRoman.com/drinkingbros and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a U.S. licensed healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/drinkingbros today, and if you're prescribed, you'll get 50% off your first month of ED treatment. Make sure you're ready to have confidence and control this summer. Roman ready. Go to GetRoman.com/drinkingbros today. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, and that's if you think about game theory, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, if you're in a two-man race, right, and the product you're delivering is the entertainment of the race, for example, which is that is what political theater is, and your opponent falls so far behind that it's not a race anymore, it is incumbent upon you to make it a race again, right?
Yeah.
Because people like a blowout every now and again, but they don't like dominance forever. Because
sure.
This side will just stop. It doesn't make any sense. So from a game theory perspective, the idea that even if you're invested in the political side of things one way or the other, it still behooves you to make sure that your opponent, your major opponent's words are taken seriously.
Yeah.
Right? Because otherwise you're not having a real discussion and they can just say, well, they're full of shit. So the fact that we don't have people crossing political lines and media and stuff like that is a big fucking problem.
I mean,
this never used to be the case until Newt Gingrich, to be honest. He, with all that nonsense, he pulled in the middle of the 90s.
And on the flip side of this, Ben, for the media in particular, you need a candidate on both sides that is exciting enough that the media can latch on to, good or bad. Because at the end of the day, they need their clicks, and they don't really give a
shit.
That's
all they care about. That was the point I'm making. They don't give two fucks. The media in this country doesn't get two fucks about what happens. I mean, look at who owns these companies, right?
Yeah.
They don't care about anything that's going on in America as long as they get their money, and they're making the same mistake that aristocrats have made in every country that's ever existed.
Yeah, well, I mean, you see that from Zucker, right? I mean, Jeff Zucker at CNN, even during the Trump race, he was like, well, you know, he's good for ratings. And you saw it from Les Moonves at CBS had the same thing, right? Like, I can't stand the guy, but he's good for ratings. Well, I mean, as long as the media are covering the news without, you know, caring exactly, you know, who is what they're covering, or if they only cover from one side of the aisle, you're going to get blowback. And the blowback, by the way, comes in many of the dumbest possible ways. This is, I feel like the country right now, we're ping-ponging between reactionary positions. The right is reacting to the left, and the left is reacting to the right, and nobody's actually reacting to the reality very often. And that gets the country into a bit of a mire. And then meanwhile, the bureaucrats just do whatever the hell they want because nobody's actually keeping their eye on the ball as to who's actually making the policy. So while we all take money from the government, and while the government continues to stretch its arms and embrace us in its sort of death grip, while all that's happening, we're busy kind of yelling at each other and ping-ponging off of each other and doing stupid things based on what the other guy is saying, as opposed to, like, what are the facts on the ground? What would be the best available solution for the facts on the ground? Like, those are conversations that just never happen. It's kind of amazing.
What's the fire ants analogy, right? You put red and black fire ants in a jar, and they will coexist, build their little habitats and whatever. If you shake the jar, they'll assume that the other guy did it and attack, right? They never stop to ask who shook the jar. This is political theater 101. This is what happens.
It is.
Like, it's why Constantine adopted Christianity in Rome to calm people down.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this has been done for thousands of years, and we still are just looking around like, well, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, this is ridiculous.
And since it is political theater, nobody's better at DeSantis than that currently. And I don't know who the challenger is going to be in 2024 unless Trump decides to make another run. In your opinion, is that even a possibility?
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. I mean, the man's bored. Like, what else does he have to do with his day? Like, the fact that we, you know, game out kind of how politics is going to go based on whether Donald Trump, you know, has a dinner reservation is kind of weird. But that is kind of what it is, right? He's like, I'm bored. I don't know what else to do with my life. I'm doing rallies. Like, that's kind of fun. But yeah, if the big problem for Trump is that his negatives are so unbelievably high that, you know, he is significantly less likely to win against a Democrat than somebody like DeSantis. And that's not, you know, making light of Trump's political appeal. The guy obviously has a base that is addicted to him, that loves him. Although I think some of that wanes over time, but like if he's bored, what Trump has is the capacity to destroy. I'm not sure he has the full capacity to build. And that's a real problem for the Republicans. So let's say that Trump gets in the race and let's say that DeSantis decides to run, right? Which I think is probably unlikely. I think if Trump gets in the race, I think that the field may clear for him just because everybody's so afraid of him. But let's say that somebody like DeSantis says, you know what? I'm going to try it. I'm going to not attack Trump. I'm just going to run my race. You think Trump's not going to attack him? Right? Trump will spend every waking moment trying to go after him because that's all Trump cares about. And so you could easily see a situation in which Trump runs, tears down the other candidates, either wins the nomination or doesn't win the nomination, and then loses, right? Like that is a very, you know, obvious possibility. Let's say that he wins the nomination and, you know, runs against Joe Biden. He's got a shot at winning for sure. But is it as good a shot as somebody who doesn't have as high negatives? I mean, Biden would prefer to run against Trump versus DeSantis, obviously. If you're looking at the primaries, let's say the other person emerges. You think Trump's going to leave them unscathed? Trump is like plutonium. He's radioactive. Like he's going to damage whoever he runs against because that's all he knows is to hit other people. So, you know, the best case scenario for the Republicans is that Trump decides to continue being a sort of powerful influencer outside of office, but doesn't run again. But if he decides to run, that is a conundrum for a lot of Republicans that I don't think is necessary. And this comes from somebody who voted for him last time, you know, who wanted him to win, who's very grateful for a lot of his accomplishments, but who also recognizes that Trump is not going to stop being Trump. For all of his, you know, for all of his good, he brings a lot of liabilities as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, and let me pose this. Let's say he does run, right? People start to get out of his way. He takes DeSantis, but Biden doesn't live through this administration. Who's the Democratic candidate that goes against him? Could Trump beat somebody other than Biden then?
The only way they're going to be able to put Kamala Harris up front is if the only message from the entire, well, it'll be the negatives about whomever her opponent is, but the only message about her will be race and gender. That'll be
sure.
It, right?
For sure.
But
I
she's
mean, listen,
too unlikable.
She's a terrible, terrible candidate.
She was the first person bounced out of the Democratic primary. Everybody forgets that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
She was really unpopular. She's very bad at this. Like, Trump could beat her. I'm not pretending Trump couldn't beat her. I think that he very well could. But it's a tougher race than if it's, say, DeSantis versus Kamala Harris. There's always the curveball possibility that the Democrats look at Kamala Harris and they just panic and they hit the panic button and their first call is to Michelle Obama, right? That's sort of the black sheep, you know, out of left field possibility is that you have, you know, somebody who they just pick somebody who's popular and they say, okay, this person is popular. People tend to like Michelle Obama. She, for some odd reason, has become non-controversial. And so we will kind of put her out there if she would go along with it. I don't know that she would, because I think that she likes her life. I mean, she gets to be a celebrity. Yeah. She's rich and famous. She's beloved. She's kind of like Oprah Winfrey at this point. So I'm not sure that she'd actually want it. But if she wanted it, I'm not sure who on the Democratic side would deny her. And that is a much rougher race for Republicans than Kamala Harris, who is just a disaster area of a candidate.
Yeah, I haven't seen somebody this unlikable in a very long time. And it almost feels like the White House is purposely hiding her right now. Like this trip to Singapore and things like that. It seemed odd to me that, you know, during the middle of everything we're going on, hey, go ahead and do that trip to Singapore because there's so much going on there. Not, let's say, I don't know, the border, for example.
Yeah. Singapore is a weird country for them to go over and have a good time, by the way, because they execute people for minor drug crimes, just like the Philippines does.
Well, right? You saw the Singaporean politicians were actually lecturing her about Afghanistan.
Yeah. Right? Everybody's lecturing them about Afghanistan.
Yeah,
right,
exactly. Like she's really bad at this. I think that Biden picked her in the misbegotten notion that he needed to do so to shore up black support, which is crazy because he had just done really well with black voters in the primaries. But he caved to his woke base and picked her. And now they're stuck with her. And that's a real problem. So that's why, you know, for all the talk about Biden being senile, which may be true, and him being, you know, somnambulant, like a sleepwalker, that is certainly true. But they may not have a choice but to run him as long as he's breathing come 2024, because you can't let Kamala be at the top of your ticket. You just can't.
Right. I mean, unless somebody else emerges. Look, there's going to be, like you said, it's all reactionary at this point. 2020 or 2022 is going to be rough for Democrats. They're going to lose the House. They're going to
probably lose the Senate.
Well, I mean,
as well.
The Senate's a tie with the Veep right now, right? So right. They'll lose that for sure.
Maybe. It depends on if Republicans lose Ohio and Wisconsin. If Republicans lose Ohio and Wisconsin, but pick up New Hampshire and Nevada, and, like, it's a little complicated, but
It's a third of the Senate is up every 2 years, right? So it depends on who's running and where. But the House for sure, right?
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult for the Democrats to hold the House.
And there's going to be some strong groundswell from the left in the form of attacks on Republicans and money, but you have to have a figurehead for that. And it can't be somebody that's in the White House. Mm-hmm. The White House can't spend their time campaigning talking about how bad the Republicans are when they're the ones in currently in power.
Yeah, I mean, honest to God, I could see a possibility that Bernie Sanders runs again. I mean, he's been 100 for the last 100 years, right? He's like he's like the principal from Back to the Future, right?
That guy was insane. Always,
he never had hair, right? Like he's always he could run again, and against Kamala Harris. I mean,
yeah, who knows? Look, he'll be, 83, I think, when he runs, if he were to run in 2024.
Yeah, he's a spring chicken. I mean, Biden is 80, right? I mean, what's the problem?
Let me ask you this. I've said this on the show quite a bit. If there's an age requirement for president, why can't there be an age limit?
I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that, and it may very well be time for something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, it is kind of crazy that except for Obama, the three presidents before that, I believe, were all born in the same year, right? So Bush was born in the same year as Clinton, who was born in the same year as Trump, I believe, who was born in the same year as Biden. I think that's right. Clinton maybe – no, I think that's correct. In any case, they're all born in the same period, right? Biden is born in, like, 1946. Obama was the only young person there. Like, Bush was younger when he got elected, but obviously not young now. Like, it is kind of crazy to think that Joe Biden is the same age as Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton was elected in 1992.
Yeah.
That's pretty
cool. Yeah, it's unbelievable. What I'm looking forward to most about 2024, though, is getting my 15th booster shot from the CDC.
Oh, I'll be getting zero of those.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. It's because of natural immunity, brother. It's the way that science has worked for thousands of years. And I'm done.
Yeah. What is your thought on this, Ben? Because, look, I don't know when this is going to end. Every day we get misinformation and new data that doesn't exist from a scientist that may or may not actually be a scientist, is definitely not a virologist. And then Dr. Fauci will probably be in there for, what, the next six administrations, because he's never going to die for some reason. What's your stance on this? And are you vaccinated right now?
I am vaccinated. So I got vaccinated very early on. I was living, because my parents are over a lot, and my parents are 65. So, so when they got vaccinated, I also got vaccinated. The baseline that I've seen is that, statistically speaking, if you're above the age of 30, you're more likely to get a serious side effect or die of COVID than you are to get a serious side effect or die of the vaccine. So it's a pretty straight up comparison for me. Even though I'm young and healthy and didn't think it was, like, super high priority to get the vaccine, I was like, okay, probably better than not to get the vaccine. And I've been saying that to people who are young and healthy. If you're above 65, you should 100% get the vaccine. Right? If you're above 65, your risk factor from the vaccine is way the hell lower than your risk factor from COVID, no question. If you're above the age of 20, then it is pretty clear that the vaccines are significantly safer than getting actual COVID in terms of side effects. If you are below the age of 20, you start to get into some dicey territory, because the grand total number of people who have died under the age of 18, for example, in the United States, is currently 385, according to the CDC. If you're under the age of 12, pretty much nobody is dying from this thing. I mean, like, statistically speaking, it's a very, very, like, vanishingly low number. And it's very weird that they're giving the same sort of dosage to 12-year-olds that they're giving to a 400-pound 35-year-old, right? That doesn't make any sense. So there's some problems there. I'm very pro-vaccine. I've been very pro-vaccine since the beginning. I've urged people to get the vaccine if they have any risk factors at all. And a huge percentage of the American population is fat. A huge percentage of the American population is unhealthy. A huge percentage is older. So, you know, I'm certainly not anti-vaccine. Natural immunity does mean that you really, scientifically speaking, don't need the vaccine per se. Natural immunity has been shown to be significantly more durable in a bunch of Israeli studies than vaccine immunity is at this point. But that's not an argument against the vaccines. It's an argument in favor of natural immunity. And so, you know, here's my view. My view is every single person above the age of 12 in the United States has now heard the information. They've had the opportunity to get vaccinated or not get vaccinated. So I'm done. And frankly, I don't care whether you mask or vax or not, because I'm vaccinated, which means that my chances of dying from COVID are now about the same as my chance of dying from a lightning strike. So I'm really not particularly worried about it. I'm not worried for my parents. And so I'm befuddled why people are so angry and worried about whether their neighbor is vaccinated. Like, if you want to, like, I may think that you're wrong. I may think that you're putting your own life at risk if you're 70 years old and decide not to get vaccinated. I may think you're not looking at the best science. But frankly, you know, I think people make decisions that I think are stupid and wrong every single day. And it's not my business as to what they do every single day, so long as it doesn't affect me. Once I've taken the vaccine, it doesn't affect me. So I really don't understand what the great hubbub is or what the limiting principle is. This is the thing where I'm really going nuts, right? This thing started as, we all have to stay home 15 days to slow the spread, mask up so that your neighbor doesn't get sick. Okay, in a world where there's no vaccine, that argument exists, right? I mean, realistically, what we should have done is we should have done what Sweden did, which is basically shield and protect the elderly. And then if you're younger and healthier, go back to work and live your life. That's exactly what Sweden did in the early days. But OK, fine. Then you get to wait until the vaccine is available. So we all waited until the vaccine was available. Then it was wait until the vaccine has been, everyone has gotten the chance to have the vaccine. Now, not only have we all had the chance to get the vaccine, virtually everybody in the major states who's above the age of 65 has taken the vaccine and is fully vaccinated at this point. In Florida, it's like 92% or something. And so now the question is, what's the limiting principle? Are we just supposed to mask up forever, vaccinated and unvaccinated? Are we supposed to never go back to work? Are we supposed to just pretend that for the rest of the time, for the rest of time, until every child is vaccinated, we're going to mask up three-year-olds who, by the way, are not capable of wearing a mask? Are we going to pretend that cloth masks work the same as N95s, which is what Fauci is doing? Like, none of this. This is what drives me nuts. Like, I'm a very follow the science guy, and I'm not vaccine skeptical, right? And yet I'm still a person who's like, you can't mandate that people do things. You got to give people freedom. You got to let people live their lives. And yet this is considered a bizarre position, despite the fact that, by the way, foreign countries are not masking their kids. The UK isn't masking kids. The Netherlands isn't masking kids. Spain and Italy aren't masking kids. Denmark isn't masking kids. Like, Sweden isn't masking. Like, what are we doing here?
I'm not sure. And I 100% agree with everything that you said. And Dan and I are in the exact same camp as you are. You've had plenty of time at this point. You've either made your choice or you're not going to make your choice. Jamming in people's faces here at this point is
well, I mean, the talking points surrounding it, that it's a public health issue if I don't get vaccinated, that is demonstrably untrue. One, because if you're vaccinated, you don't have to worry about me. Two, I have natural immunity. Yeah. Like, there's literally no chance of you getting life-threatening illness from me at this point, regardless of what I do for the rest of my life. So that's the basis they're using for the
draconian. Or by the way, even if somebody were to get a life-threatening illness from you, that's only because they themselves did not vaccinate or have COVID before, right? Which is their
Correct.
Choice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes,
like it's possible that I, as a vaccinated person, could pass on COVID to somebody who's unvaccinated. But this is my whole point. You're an adult. If you don't want to be vaccinated, welcome to life. You know, we all undertake risks on a daily basis. You've decided to live with that risk. You're going to get immunity. Here's the rule. Right now with Delta, because it's so transmissible, you're going to get immunity one of two ways. You're either going to get COVID itself, or you're going to get the vax. There's no third choice where you just sit around and everybody else protects you the rest of your life.
Right. Yeah. It's stupid. And it's with the Delta thing, too. The current mRNA vaccines are treating a spike protein, right? There's more proteins on a COVID virus than just the spike protein. And natural immunity gives you a boost against all of them, not just one, right? So it's we had Anthony Scaramucci on the show last week. He's just a giant piece of shit. And we had a relatively decent conversation. I mean, I made fun of him for saying that Cuomo was a good guy or whatever for a while. But at the end, he was asking me what our position on vaccination is. I'm like, I don't care what people do. Like, it's and I didn't say that to be flippant. I said it because I've been researching this shit on a daily basis for over a year now, and it's pretty obvious what the case is. But he's like, you're the reason, you're just a Russian agent, you're fucking blah blah blah. I told him to go fuck himself, and then he rage quit the show. But it's that idea that you have the moral high ground as somebody that's trying to force somebody else to inject shit into their body because you can't read a fucking textbook. You know what I mean? And this is a big problem in America because it extends way beyond the CDC and how that's been weaponized. It extends beyond the president's office and all this stuff. 45% of the country think they have the right to tell you what to do, right?
Well, this is the problem, man. I mean, like, it is astonishing to me how the institutions have completely destroyed their own credibility here. So you had the institutions basically saying from the beginning, we are going to lie to you for your own good. Right, we're going to tell you the masks don't work, and then we're going to tell you the masks do work. We're going to tell you the kids need to mask in school, then we're going to tell you the kids shouldn't be in school, then we'll tell you kids should be in school. We're going to tell you that you definitely should mask after being vaccinated, then we'll tell you don't need to mask after you're vaccinated, then we'll tell you need to mask up again after you're vaccinated. We'll tell you that it is right, and we'll tell you that it is perfectly horrible for you to go out and protest against lockdowns because that's dangerous and terrible, but if you're out there twerking for George Floyd in mass numbers, then the virus won't affect you. It's an extremely woke virus. And in fact, it's racism is a public health problem. So you're doing a vital good by being out there protesting in the streets with literally somewhere between 16 and 25 million other people in the middle of a pandemic. Right. That's all good. And so, you know, as this thing unfolded, if you offer people just the straight scientific information, then they get to make a choice and then it's on them. Right. This is why I keep saying when it comes to the vaccine, the chances of side effects like the evidence of severe side effects from the vaccine, particularly like myocarditis, for example, it's like affecting one in every 6,700 people who take the Moderna vaccine, for example, and it's usually transitory. The chances of you getting myocarditis from COVID are higher than that in virtually every age group, right? If you actually lay out the stats and then somebody says, listen, I hear all that, but I'm still vaccine hesitant for whatever reason. I think that we need 2 years of data. I'm younger and I don't think it's going to affect me anyway. So since it's not, there is no longitudinal data and I'm 20 and I'm not overweight, I'll take my chances with it. Listen, that's your call. I may think it's the wrong call, but it's your call. But the public health officials never did that. The public health officials were like, we're going to lie to you every step of the way. So when they say things like that I'm saying, right? When they say the exact same stuff I'm saying, they have no credibility. And so people are like, yeah, but you told me a second ago that masks are more important than vaccines. So why shouldn't I just wear a mask for the rest of time? Right? You just told me 1 second ago that my kids are supposed to mask up forever from the vaccinated. So, and then you're telling me it's really important that I vaccinate. So like, which is it? And the answer, of course, is that if you had just not lied to people this whole way and turned this into a political football, then you might have a little more credibility when you tell people to vax. I mean, I've been telling people to vax from day one. Like, I think it's actually really important based on your age and based on your pre-existing health conditions that you vaccinate. And I think that the vaccines are basically, frankly, I think they're a scientific miracle. We developed them inside of a year. They've probably saved hundreds of thousands of lives in the United States, particularly for people above the age of 60. And yet I also recognize that you as an individual human being in a free country have the right to breathe. You have the right to make your own decisions. And again, I've noticed that the Venn diagram of people who are busybodies and the number of and the Venn diagram of people who are completely vaccinated, it's a circle, right? Meaning that they're concentric circles. Not everybody who's vaccinated is a busybody, but everybody who's a busybody is vaccinated, which is so weird. Because again, if you're vaccinated, you have the least reason to be a busybody. If you're vaccinated, you're bulletproof, man. If you're vaccinated, your chances of dying from this virus are minuscule.
For sure. But I would say that these people are just as big victims of the media, the circus in the media, as anybody, right? Like, they're being told every day by people they trust that if everybody else doesn't get vaccinated, their lives are in danger. Their children's lives are in danger. They're being lied to constantly, right? And it's funny. One of the doctors from Johns Hopkins that was talking about this Tel Aviv study that began with 80,000, expanded to 800,000 people, right? That's scientifically significant data-wise, if you don't know. That is a massive study. I mean, on the we've never seen a study that large before for a vaccination ever in the history of humanity, I think. So even a doctor from Johns Hopkins who has no relationship to the media or any of this bullshit is like, yeah, it appears as though natural immunity constitutes quite a greater protection than just the vaccine. And Tucker Carlson is like, why is nobody talking about that? My segment starts and I'm like, hey, I'll tell you why nobody's talking about it, because it's fucking free. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's no money to be made here. So why would they be talking about it? And you see this guy, this professor at George Mason University, his faculty was going to force him to get vaccinated or whatever, like the NFL does. Like, you have to do all these extra protocols that are fucked up. And he was like, no, I have natural immunity, and here's the proof that it's better. And they're like, what? Looking? And he took him to court and won. So now his natural immunity is essentially a vaccine passport.
Well, you're right. And you know, that you're exactly right about natural immunity. This was very, very early on in the pandemic. They tried to do antibody studies, right? They like Jay Bhattacharya over at Stanford, he tried to do an antibody study in Santa Clarita, California. And they found that a pretty significant percentage of the population already had antibodies. One of the things that has happened here also is that, you know, Israel, which is very highly vaccinated, right? It turns out that there really is no herd immunity to this virus, right? So the notion that you're going to get to herd immunity where the transmission levels are so low that there can't be a breakthrough case, that is really a pipe dream. And everybody sort of acknowledges that it's a pipe dream.
The viral shedding is way too high. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yep. So again, at this point, what that means is that I keep repeating it because it's true. Your choice. You can either get natural immunity via the actual virus, or you can get vaccine immunity, which may not be as durable, but maybe a lot less risky, right? Those are the choices, because natural immunity is more durable, but it also comes with the risk that you might get a lot more sick than if you get the vaccine. Right. And particularly if you're vulnerable, then the vaccine is going to be a better risk for you than natural immunity. Like, I know people right now who are in the hospital because they didn't get the vaccine, thinking that, you know, if it hit them, it wasn't going to be a big deal. Those people tend to be older, right? They tend to be older. They tend to be fatter. They tend to have pre-existing health conditions. All of that is the case. But I just keep coming back to this. What is the end point? What is the end goal? Nobody will set a damned end goal. Nobody will tell you when this is over. They have assumed in their head that the government is capable of completely quashing COVID, which is why you see in Australia, for example, that you'll have like one person die from COVID and they'll shut down the entire country of 25 million people. And meanwhile, yeah. by the way, they think that the government is so good at this that they will shut all their borders and they will prevent anybody from traveling and they'll do all of this nonsense. And then they'll only vaccinate like 25% of their population. I've noticed that the ire of the left when it comes to vaccine levels doesn't apply to Australia, where they're shutting everything down, and yet 25% of the population is vaxxed. Right? Why isn't anybody angry at New Zealand? Only 25% of the population is vaxxed over there. What have they been doing the whole time? And the answer is that if you put all your faith in government, it's usually a bad idea. So, you know, it's a point of high irritation for me because people are not living. I really think what happened is that a switch flipped in the American brain and all over the world, actually, in the brain. People don't think of relative risk. They only think of absolute risk, right? They think of activities as risky activities or not risky activities. A risky activity is skydiving. A not risky activity is going in your car. Right now, in reality, going in your car is way more risky than skydiving, statistically speaking. But because your brain is wired to be like, yeah, jumping out of a plane from 10,000 feet is inherently more risky than driving around on the ground where the wheels are on the road, we don't tend to think of driving as risky. When it came to COVID, the switch was flipped, and it keeps getting flipped over and over and over by the media. There's a significant chance you're going to die of COVID, which is why you saw in the middle of the pandemic, there were polls showing how deadly people thought COVID was. And they were always off by a factor of 10, off by a factor of 100, right?
Yep.
Like COVID was pretty risky, relatively speaking, for people above the age of 65. And it was not extraordinarily risky compared to other diseases, certainly, but for people under the age of 20. If you were under 20, you're more likely to die of the flu than you were to die of COVID by IFR, right? Now, in absolute terms, the infection fatality rate, the denominator may go up, right? Flu is not as transmissible as, for example, the Delta variant. So you'll get a higher absolute number of people who get the disease, which means a higher absolute number of people who die of COVID. But on a relative risk level, you're better off getting COVID than the flu if you're 12 years old, for example. Okay, but nobody actually thinks of the relative risk. Because if you ever thought about relative risk, you'd never get in your car in the morning. So instead, the media just beat, like, I promise you, if the media went blanket wall-to-wall coverage every day for a year, telling you that if you drive your car, there's a 1 in 1,000 possibility that you will die today, people would start taking Uber like mad. And that's basically what happened over the course of the last year.
Why won't they set an end date for this, but they will set one for Afghanistan? I don't understand it. For the life of me, I don't.
They like the control. I mean, honestly, I was not one of these people at the beginning.
That's what I
think, too. At the beginning, I was not one of these people who's like, they're doing this just to control you. I was like, okay, we don't know much about the virus because we don't know much at this point. Like, I'll go along with some of the restrictions. Then they started being crazier and crazier, right? I started this pandemic in L.A. In L.A., they shut down all the public parks. They went to the turnouts on, like, Mulholland Drive, and they put, like, yellow tape on the turnouts on Mulholland Drive. Like, people were going to congregate there and mack on each other in mass numbers, and it was going to spread the virus on literally just like a little piece of dirt off of Mulholland Drive. And I was like, this place is crazy. And by the way, they're still crazy over in LA doing this. I came to Florida and we visited for 3 weeks and they were, you know, we were eating outside with my parents at a restaurant. It was totally fine. And I was like, this is much more reasonable. There's a group of people who truly believe, it's almost a pagan belief in the power of government. If I perform all of these rituals that government tells me to do, I will live. If I do not perform these rituals that the government tells me to do, or worse, if I say that the rituals are ineffective, I will die, which is, I think, why you see the way the media coverage is right now. They will like, if somebody is unvaccinated and then dies of COVID, they'll mock them. Right? It's not a tragedy. They'll mock them. If somebody is in a blue state and the person is unvaccinated but masked and then dies of COVID, right, which is happening, obviously, because masks are not 100% protective, particularly cloth masks, you won't see any of the same sort of stuff. Even though that person could have gotten vaccinated, which is actually like 99% effective against death, you'll see a story about, like, there was one, I think, in the Washington Post today about a black mother. I think she was in a blue state and she masked instead of getting the vaccine because she kept hearing the masks were super effective and then she got it and she died. That wasn't a mocking story. But if you're an anti-vax person, or if you're a person who thinks the vaccine is terrible and horrible and then you die of COVID, the media will openly mock your death. Okay, that is because that is not because the media are, you know, honest. It's because the media are of the belief universally that if you listen to the government, you are good. And if you don't listen to the government, you are bad. Even if you're vaxxed, even if you're doing the responsible things, if you're not listening to the government, this means you are bad.
Right. And it's, this is the same thing we used to see in basic training back in the Vietnam era. And even before then, where the enemy is dehumanized, right? I mean, it's psychological warfare, basically. Mm-hmm. Not that they think of it that way. It just happens to be what they're doing.
I mean, you saw this from the education secretary, right? Arne Duncan yesterday, right? Obama's education secretary. He tweeted out something like, you know, isn't it amazing the mindset of ISIS suicide bombers and anti-vax people is exactly the same? And it's like, oh, really? You can drop it in Kabul and you can check that out personally if you'd like.
Yeah, that was the craziest tweet I've seen this year. And yet there is no backlash for that.
I can get him a flight to Afghanistan right now if you'd like one. If you want to go talk to a suicide bomber and then talk to me, who I'm not anti-vax, but if you want to talk to an unvaxxed person and then the Taliban, I can make that happen.
Yeah, and we can get you an Airbnb for free if you take in a couple refugees. Airbnb's doing that right now.
But the media has been complicit in this shit since the very beginning. You know that by how they report, what numbers they reported. So it started out with the number of infections, then it went to the number of deaths. Then it went to the number of infections again, right? Then it became what percentage of your state is vaccinated or not, and you should feel bad about that.
Yeah, no, that's right. They kept shifting around the stats, and they kept doing case counts as opposed to hospitalization and death counts.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, hospitalization and death counts, that's an actual fair metric. Death counts are the ones that you really care about. But instead, they kept doing case counts, and by the way, only very specific case counts. So, for example, over the last month and a half, all you saw was the spike in Florida, right? Huge spike in Florida. And it's true. We had a huge spike in terms of cases, and we had a big spike in terms of deaths, right? To the point where we were having a daily death rate that was on par with like the biggest death rate we saw back in January. And that was because a huge percentage of younger people were now getting it. Again, when you increase the denominator of caseload, even though the infection fatality rate stays the same, the numerator also is going to increase in kind. So you're going to get more absolute numbers of death, even though your chances of actually dying from the thing remain relatively low. More people get it, more people die. Okay, fine. There's another state that had a bigger spike than Florida on a per capita basis, and no one talks about it, and that's Louisiana. Louisiana has a 40% vax rate. The vax rate in Florida right now overall among adults is 52%. Actually, I'm sorry, among the entire population is 52%. Among people who are above the age of 60, it's 92% in the state of Florida. Louisiana is way lower. They had a huge spike, huge number of deaths in Louisiana. Why didn't you hear about that? You didn't hear about that because the governor is John Bel Edwards, who's a Democrat, right? Mm-hmm. So you just don't hear about that. It's not important. Right? It doesn't matter that if you look at the trajectory of the virus in, for example, Hawaii had a big spike. And nobody's talking about the Hawaii spike because, again, Hawaii is blue. Also, Hawaii's on an island, so it tends to debunk a lot of the notions that you can protect yourself from this simply by locking down for the rest of your life. So it's, and you'll see in the winter, because there are a lot of people, so New York's vaccination rate's like 59%. A huge percentage of people who are not vaccinated already had COVID. But you're going to see a spike in the Northeast in the winter because that's how it works, right? In the summer. In the South, like the media constantly act as though it's a shock when in the South, in the summer, there's a spike. Yeah, idiots, it's hot outside. People went inside. And guess what? It's going to be cold in the winter in the Northeast and the Midwest, and people will go inside because it's cold outside. And then they will get the virus. Are you going to project the same kind of shock? I was looking at the stats today in terms of age-adjusted death rates per state. Right? And that's kind of important because the thing striates really heavily based on age. So Florida, for example, should have like tons and tons and tons of deaths. It's the second oldest state in America. 21% of its population is over the age of 65. So if you do the age-adjusted COVID death rates, Phil Kirpin over at the Washington Examiner has done this. If you look at the age-adjusted death rates, Florida ranks like 17th best, right? But Florida is the one that's getting all the crap. Meanwhile, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, all these states really did horribly. You never hear about any of that. Cuomo was the hero of the Republic while he wasn't grabbing ass, right?
Yeah.
Or murdering old people. I mean, I guess it depends on which one of those you want to focus on. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and he got real lucky with the Afghanistan thing because he went away.
Right.
That was off the headlines.
But we're living in I think Lewis Black said this in 2004 during a comedy show. And he was right then, and he would be even more right now. We're in a post-reality society, right? Everybody has become so tribalistic that they've regressed into their own corners, right? And there's very little space left for nuanced conversation. That's why people like Rogan get lambasted by the media so much, because they know he's doing what they're supposed to be doing and they feel embarrassed about it. It's like when you're a shitty husband and somebody does something nice for your wife and you get pissed off about it.
Yeah.
That's how the media is feeling, right? They're embarrassed and they won't admit it to themselves, right? And all they're going to do is lash out against anybody they see. Like what you're talking about, having Democratic politicians cross the aisle and come on your show. That's not going to happen because they know the mainstream media will light their ass up. I mean, fucking Matthew McConaughey got compared to an alt-right person because he went on Rogan and Jordan Peterson's show. Are you fucking kidding me? Jordan Peterson doesn't give a fuck about politics.
Yeah.
If you've listened to anything that man has ever said, he doesn't give a fuck about the right or the left. He's, if you ask him if it's important that the right and left exist, he would make some analogy about how, what is
a chaos and order. Right, yeah, the right represents order, the left represents chaos, and you need both, right? That's his thing, yep.
Yeah, like a bird with one wing doesn't fly anywhere.
Right.
Right? It's a mother and a father. It's binary, which so is gender, by the way. We all know that. And speaking of that, let's get on to critical race theory, because this is the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. And it's like, it's like giving somebody poison and then they're happy to drink it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the wildest shit I have ever seen in my life. If you're in a, if you're just from a, I think this is a social insurgency that's happening right now. And just from an insurgency standpoint, what you don't do is piss off the majority of people. You don't accuse the majority of people. Say that this is a, I've heard other commentators say this before, and it's kind of a nuanced take, but the idea that, let's say, all white people are bad, or that America is founded on whatever the fuck, 1619 theory bullshit. It was still white men in Congress and the White House that ended slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't because black people were enslaved and started a lobbying agency and convinced people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's not how it worked. Men, particularly white men, realized that this is bullshit. And a lot of them thought that from the beginning and just didn't have the power to change anything. And they stopped it. Now, that doesn't excuse America's national shame or anything like that. But it does show that this the proclivity people have to put people in groups and then blame the group, corporal punishment, as it were, like that, is what anti-racists have been talking about for hundreds of years. And now that is their primary strategy.
Yeah. And as a Ben, are you a parent?
I am. Yeah, I have three
kids. I am too. So yeah, I've got two kids. And this is why this in particular topic bothers me the most, is I don't want my kids going to school learning from somebody who's opinion-based, because critical race theory isn't really coming from facts, and most of it would be, if it is to be taught in schools, by white people with some form of guilt about their own race, versus bringing in, you know, an educated black man who can walk you through slavery. To me, the textbooks say it all, and if you're looking at slavery and somehow you think, man, that was a pretty good idea, chances are you're a fucked up individual anyways, and there's no changing your thinking. What is your stance on this? Because I'm sure we probably lie in the same camp.
I mean, it's sheer garbage, obviously. I mean, listen, I send my kids to private school because, frankly, I wouldn't send them to public school. You know, given the predations of the NEA and the AFT and all the restrictions that they have in terms of the curriculum. But it's, yeah, I mean, it's gross. I mean, the thing to understand about critical race theory is that it's not just a theory, right? It has a, what they call a praxis component, meaning that it is an activist idea. If you're not participating in the activism, you're not fulfilling the theory. So it's not merely like, okay, we're going to teach you about this particular perspective in school, and then we're going to show you all the problems with that perspective. Instead, it's everything must be seen through this prism. So the prism of critical race theory is essentially that racism is in the air we breathe, it's in the water we drink, it's in every institution that surrounds us, and it's inescapable, and it inevitably benefits people who are white. Right? People who are white are secret beneficiaries of all of this. Even if you think you're not a beneficiary, even if you're really poor, even if you had a really tough life, you're a beneficiary of the system that was created to establish white supremacy as the racial hierarchy in the United States. And the only way to be considered not racist is to be anti-racist, right? This is what you hear from Ibram X. Kendi. There are not three categories. Normally, when you think about racism, you think about three categories, right? You think there's racist, there's not racist, and then there's like activist. Right. But according to Ibram Kendi, there are really only two categories. There's no such thing as not racist. Either you are racist or you are anti-racist. And if you're anti-racist, this means that you have to not oppose racism. You have to be in favor of racism in order to destroy the structures of racism. Right. You have to be in favor of what some people have termed reverse racism. For example, any institution that promulgates inequality is in essence racist. Now, this is really stupid. OK, the notion that any institution that ends with unequal results, the institution itself is bad. That's every institution human beings have ever created or lived under. Right? There is never a system anywhere in human history where everybody ends with a completely equal amount of money, ends with a completely equal distribution of resources. That's not the way anything has ever worked. Forget about race. Just like if you had an all-white class, it wouldn't work that way. There'd be a bell curve of performance, for example, you know, with regard to only white students. But,
oh, you mean like in England for fucking 1600 years?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have winners and you have losers. Every society has people who are doing well, people who are doing poorly. What United States did, because of its system of classical liberalism, is it said, we're going to treat you as an individual. So now you individually have the ability to rise or fall. The left says, because those individuals don't aggregate equally among the groups, right? Which is always going to be true, right? You can draw lines any, like take, for example, criminal justice. 99% of people in jail for violent crime are men, right? You never hear anybody who's in favor of quote unquote criminal justice reform be like, you know what? This is just sheer sexism. This is the sexism of the system. right? This is the this is the evil anti-male sexism of the system. Instead, there's a recognition like, well, if guys commit more violent crimes, then probably they should go to jail more often than women do, right? But in every other system of American life, the idea is if you don't end up with equal outcome, this is because the system is broken and it needs to be torn down. And if you are not involving yourself in the tearing down, then you are part of the problem. And so there's this push in classrooms. It gets simplified down to white guilt, but it really does get pushed on white kids. You are responsible for the system. Only you can alleviate the problems in the system. And Shelby Steele talked about this 2 decades ago in an excellent book called White Guilt. He said, really what this is about, this isn't about like black Americans pushing. This is about guilty white people trying to reestablish their moral authority by telling people they are the only ones who can fix the bad systems of America. So give them all the power.
Right.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Look, I know you're a busy man. We appreciate your time today. I've got one last question for you here, because you're on Daily like we are. Some shows are good. Some shows are bad. Some things we say are regrettable.
If I say...
I've got to ask you, because we're the drinking bros, about the wet-ass pussy comments. Do you ever look back and be like, shit, god damn it? Because we've all said crazy
no,
shit.
No, man, that was one of the best segments ever on my show. Like, it was 15 minutes long. Like, nobody ever actually goes and watches that segment. It was a 15-minute-long breakdown of the song. By the way, I've been doing that for years, right? I've been doing something called Deconstructing the Culture on my show, going all the way back to, like, 2014, 2013, when I was doing a radio show, where I would read deadpan lyrics to rap songs, because it's inherently hilarious, right? I'm a nerdy white guy, you know, wearing a yarmulke, reading, like, the most filthy lyrics in the world. I've been doing that for years. Yeah. And so the fact that they took it, this is the part that drives me nuts about the online world, is they take something where I'm obviously joking, and then they're like, does he even know he's joking? It's like, yeah, no shit, I know I'm joking. The whole thing's a joke, right? I mean, that it's so irritating. But, and honestly, like, my wife thought it was the funniest thing she ever saw. Like, when I came to her, and I asked her, like, can you diagnose the condition whereby you actually have to, like, have a bucket and a mop for this? Can you diagnose the condition where, like, the vaginal fluid is spilling out, in the music video, spilling out the front door of the home like it's Hurricane Katrina? Like, can you diagnose that condition? Like, my wife thought that was hysterical. So the fact that that blew up, like, you know, if I've been trended for worse things.
It's really funny, man. And again, look, you're one of our favorites. And then lastly here, before we leave, you were kind enough to have us over at your office a couple years ago in L.A. We had about a 4-hour lunch together. It was us and your producer. Shout out to Jeremy, by the way, one of the best in the business.
Clavin and Knowles were there, too.
Love your entire team. Love your entire team and everything you do. And you let us pick your brain about how to run and operate a media company, which is what we did. We have 16 shows on the network. And if we didn't have the ability or the time or the opportunity to sit down with somebody like you who is so successful to kind of show us the way, I don't know where we would be today. So we are extremely grateful for you, your people, and your time, including today. Thank you for being on the show, Ben Shapiro.
Hey, thanks so much. It's very nice of you.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. The book is The Authoritarian Moments, How the Left Weaponized America's Institutions Against Dissent. It is out now. It is a number one bestseller. Please check that out on all platforms. Thank you for being here, Ben.
Thanks a lot.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.